Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jamie Baines. Today's returning guest is the one and only Johnny Calloway. The last time Johnny and I talked was back in May 2022. I've been following Johnny on Instagram since then and always enjoy his posts. One of his recent posts was of him and three of his sons standing outside in the snow, shirts off and flexing for the camera. I saw that and thought of one word, fatherhood. So I reached out to him to see if he'd be willing to come on and do another episode, and true to form, he agreed right away. So without further ado, here's Johnny. And welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is, we are checking back in with Johnny Calloway. Johnny, how are you doing, man?
Doing fantastic, sir. How about yourself?
I'm good. Can you believe it's been almost 2 years since we've spoken last?
Hey, that's crazy, man. Tell you, Tom, they say the days are long, but the years are short.
You're right. You're right, man. So look, I listened to an interview before, and like you said, you were just, I love talking to you because you are just so knowledgeable and you got such a firm grasp on everything. And I just wanted to check in with you. And what really got me going again was a picture that you posted with your kids, your sons, out in the snow. All you guys got your shirts off, you're making muscles, and it's just fatherhood, man. You were just so into being a dad. I just wanted to bend your ear about that again and hear what you got to say and how you've been doing.
Yeah, man. First off, all glory to God. But no, today's been a day. I've coached 4 basketball games today, and my daughter had a soccer game. So I've been a super dad today.
Man, tell me about fatherhood, man. Tell me about your views on fatherhood. We'll talk about some other stuff too, but really, you really epitomize just being a dad and just being a father. And all people need to do really is go to your Instagram, which you've changed your handle, I believe, since last time.
Yeah, I went with the title of Misunderstood Genius because I went on a Jubilee TV show. And I got a ton of negative feedback, but I understand because people don't understand me. And if you knew my background, then you would get why I looked at life from the perspective I do.
Uh-huh.
But if you just skimmy surface level and see a 6-second clip that a network posted, then of course it's just gonna make you seem like that I'm not a pretty cool person.
Well, what kind of feedback? What happened that you got negative feedback? I can't imagine giving you negative feedback,
dude. So I went on the Jubilee Network. They're out based out of California. They reached out to me and asked me would I come on their show. It was conservative parents versus liberal teens. So I was like, cool, whatever. And I really don't even care about politics at all. Mm-hmm. I just, if you ask me about my views as a father, I look at life and I lean a little more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But I went on the show, was extremely respectful to the kids. We shot for 4.5 hours and they edited down to a 23-minute episode. And so every segment that you hear me talking, it's never something I really say. It's a clip of this and a clip of this and a clip of this all put together. And I know that, but the general public watching the show would have no way of knowing that.
Were they trying to make you look bad?
Yes.
Was that their goal?
The goal was to make me look more hostile than I was, to make me look like I wasn't as friendly or understanding to the kids. And they did their job. I had to take like a bias survey before the show started, and I scored a perfect 50% in the middle, right?
Uh-huh.
If you watch that show right now, it says I scored 86% to the right. So they did everything they could to make it like I was some conspiracy theory nut and I didn't know what I was talking about. You know how the media works.
Well, why'd they do that to you? I mean, did they just find you or just have they been following your pages?
Because
no. We talked last time and we talked a little bit politics, but neither one of us really care about politics.
Yes.
And you are, in my view, you're not leaning left or right. You're telling it like it is.
But it's a human.
Thank you. It's a human thing. And it should always be a human thing. And so were they just trying to get you in like in a gotcha moment and just wanted it for ratings like we've talked about before?
Mm-hmm. 100%. And because when I talk to you, man, I'm super new to this public speaking and how all of it works. But I've learned most of the company, they want to the shock value. They want to upset the masses. The last thing they want is unity and healing and understanding. They want humans at their throat over every single issue.
I hate it. I hate that. Yeah. I hate it.
But I could also say I've evolved and learned that that's not just that side. That's also the conservative side. Agreed. That's why you never never really hear any solutions from the conservative side. They just, you stupid liberals, you dumb liberals. It's like, why don't you enlighten them on why you think the way you do? Because everybody can find common ground. And that's what I learned. But I don't know how Jubilee found me. They had just DM me on Instagram. I was like, hey, would you want to be on our show? We'll fly you out to California. And I'm like, all right, cool. And it's kind of the same way when Officer Tatum was like, if y'all know who this guy is, get me on his show.
Yeah.
So I worked with him, man, and everything has went down since I worked with him. I've never heard from him again. He sold me a bunch of false hopes and dreams that weren't real.
Really?
Yeah, and I've just learned he's no different than white liberals, if I'm being 100% honest. His job is to antagonize the masses.
True.
And when you step back and look at the whole landscape of public figures, the more money they make, the more they sell you this character. It's not like they become more famous and more popular and make more money and they become more authentic. They become more of a character.
And that's what makes money for them, right? Because, I mean, and see, that's the thing, man. It's like, because I agree with you 100% because, you know, for a while there, I'd be following like Fox News because I got sick of like CNN and MSNBC. But then when you really truly start opening your eyes, you're right. It's the same on both sides.
Yep.
And so you gotta try to find a common ground or a middle ground somewhere, but that's getting harder and harder to find.
And that's the threat to the world, is someone who can find middle ground. And I feel like that's why conservatives don't really deal with me as much, nor liberal networks won't bring me on, is because you're not going to make people hate me because I'm not a hateful person. I believe all humans are special. Mm-hmm. We all have a gift. But you got to look inside yourself and not look to this world, because this world wants you to have anxiety. It wants you not believe in yourself. If you would say that we're living in a silent depression, then it would make sense that the energy we're receiving from the radio stations, from the TV networks, from the social media, it would make sense that it's all depressing as well. Because where the mind goes, that's where attention, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I need that energy on you. I need you depressed when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
I need every alert to tell you something bad has happened about the war, about the poverty or the economy. I just need to make you as sad as possible. Because we all can agree, when you feel good and you're full of joy, you share that with the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're irritable and you're pissed off and your money is tight, you don't really want to deal with people.
Right.
And what's
your experience at ground level? I know what my experience is at ground level dealing with people. What I've found, at least on my experience, is most people aren't either far left or far right. That's the stuff they want to sell us. Most people are firmly in the middle and just pretty much want what's best. And that transcends race, religion, gender, everything, at least from my experience. Do you see that as well or no?
Yes. So, man, my current profession, like, I work for Spectrum. I do door-to-door sales. So I'm knocking on conservative door. I'm knocking on people who got Trump stickers. I'm knocking on people's door who got the LGBT flag in front of their house. And people are just people, bro. I can sell internet and a cell phone to anybody. You know what I'm saying?
And do they care that you're a black man or that you're not a black man or anything like that?
No,
and that's the thing, man. It really gets frustrating. And it really, I don't know. I think, but the more people that you talk to, again, at ground level, the more you realize that the media and everything, it's all to make money at our expense.
Yeah. And, you know, I grew up in a homeless shelter. I grew up in Section 8, extreme poverty. So I believed all of the narratives of the world. I thought I was poor because of my skin color. And it's like you become an adult and you look around and you like, wait, people are just believing these lies. None of it's real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason that Napoleon Hill said anything the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. But if I can trick you into never thinking bigger than your block or your hood or your city, then I've already defeated you.
And do you think it's a laziness on a lot of the public's part because they don't know there are other avenues to go down besides CNN or besides Fox or besides anything like that? I mean, it seems like it's easy to consume that because that's right there in front of you and it's everywhere.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, you don't know a distraction is a distraction until it's completed its job distracting you.
Mm-hmm.
And I never would have looked at the NFL as a distraction. I never would have looked at fantasy football as a distraction. I never would have looked at CNN as a distraction. But now I understand everything that's entertaining is to pull you away from God. It's to pull you away from thinking higher, from elevating your consciousness. Because if I'm always entertaining something pleasurable, my dopamine is always good for field. My body feels happy.
Mm-hmm.
And with dispensaries popping up on every corner and alcohol on every corner, you know, you're always giving humans something negative. And unfortunately, we all are addicted to something. Like, addiction is a natural trait.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just learned myself to replace the negative habits with the positive habits. But I don't know if I could say it's laziness on the general public, just because I'm a human and I understand life is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work in a full-time job and you get your check and your check is barely paying all your bills, and you got children, you got a spouse. Let's say you and your spouse are divorced, so y'all got a bad relationship. I just understand why so many people check out from life. I truly do.
Mm-hmm.
I got two dead children, so it would have been easy for me to pack up and mm-hmm. say, I'm through with this mm-hmm. thing.
And your mom died too.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. I don't know what is in me that keeps me going. I don't know what's just in me that keeps me happy. I don't know what in me. I know life is bigger than what the world tries to make it seem. And in the middle of every storm, there's a calm, peaceful stillness. And I've just found that within myself. And I'm just trying to share that with the world. I ain't really trying to change nobody's mind or opinion or change their political perspective. Because no matter if you're conservative or liberal or gay or straight or trans or in America or China or Australia, you're going to go through some stress. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a hard day. You're going to lose somebody close to you. How you respond to that is how you decide what type of human you are. And that's all I'm trying to share with the world. You know, most people, when they hear that I got two dead children and they hear that my mother overdosed, their first response is, oh, my God, I feel so bad for you. I'm so sorry for you. It's like, no, I'm sorry for you because you've never experienced that pain, that hurt, that trauma. I know how I dealt with it and who I am now. You don't know how you're going to recover. You don't know if you ever will recover. And that's the scariest part about life
mm-hmm.
is you find out who you are in the hardest, darkest times.
So you actually use those to your advantage to know that you could come through it and make and survive through it.
I lived in a homeless shelter. I didn't have my parents had domestic violence. I got probably 50 friends that's murdered. I understand in the middle of every negative situation, it's something for you to learn from and grow. And I haven't took any losses in life. I've just had a bunch of valuable lessons. And God gives us all a different playbook to get to our destination. This just happened to be mine.
And do you instill that in your kids? And if so, how do you do it? I know you do it by example a lot. Do you also talk to them a lot? Do you let them watch TV and go over what they're watching? How do you do it?
So we don't watch much TV in my home at all. I watch a lot of podcasts. My kids know I listen to a ton of audiobooks. They see me with some headphones in, they say, Daddy, what book you listening to? Not what song you listening to. But they know about, you know, Larry Elder, Marcus Aurelius, Marcus Garvey, Wallace D. Waddles. Like, I try to give them the content that I consume.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, every now and then, I show them who their daddy used to be. I'll let them hear some Lil Wayne, some Tupac, some Jay-Z. You know, I'll show them some pictures of daddy with the gold teeth in his mouth. And I'm like, Daddy, that was you.
Why do you do that, Johnny? Why do you show them both sides?
Because we still live in an urban environment, right? And if any kid who turns on, you turn on NBA 2K, you hear Madden, you hear rap music playing. You know, if you look at the rappers, they got their pants sagging, they got the chains. So it's easy for kids to gravitate to that. What I show them is daddy was already there. Like, I don't need to study black culture, urban culture, none of that, because that was my reality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with studying literature 24/7, 365, because it's things that I don't know. Ain't nobody put me on Beethoven or Mozart or all this good stuff in the world, you know what I'm saying? So I show my kids the world is a lot bigger than what society tries to make it seem. And the dopest part about that is my kids are the cool kids at school because they don't follow the trends of mm-hmm. hip-hop mm-hmm. and society because they're truly authentically themselves. All the other little boys gravitate to them. All the girls flock to them already. I coach the fourth grade basketball team and the fifth grade basketball team, so I'm very present in the school. And the kids love me because you see my image. I'm covered in tattoos. I play basketball really good. But I don't associate with anything hip-hop because I look at that as straight-up poison to children. Right now, I probably can recite you almost any Lil Wayne song you threw out there. That holds no value. But me reading these books has made me more money than I ever could have imagined. And that's what I tell my kids, you know. Yeah, playing basketball is cool, but get your intellectual property up and watch what happens. Because the world is always craving for somebody who has a different perspective and a different outlook. That can be you.
Absolutely. And do you encourage them to listen to the rap music that you listen to or not to, or let them take their own, make their own path?
So what I do, like I said, man, I'm a different type of dad. I understand they're going to gravitate to rap and to culture. I purposely look for things to show them. So, I mean, I browse for Christian rappers, and it's like, oh, I know my son. He'll like this style. And I'm like, oh, I got this song for you. And now if you hear my kids listen to music throughout the house, they listen to Christian rap. And they got their friends on Christian rap, where it's roll with Christ to get rolled over. You know what I'm saying? If you ain't Jesus side, we going to slide. So I think the biggest problem with most parents is they stop being cool to their children. And if your kids are going to look up to somebody regardless, whether mm-hmm. it's LeBron James or mm-hmm. so I am the coolest person to my kids, but that's because of me. That's because I get up and work out at 4 o'clock in the morning and I got 6-pack abs. So all the things that I do, my kids take interest in. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to make a YouTube video, it's daddy, can I make a video with you? If I'm going to lift weights, daddy, can I come work out with you? You know, I drink kombuchas and they, daddy, can you buy me a kombucha? You know what I'm saying? Like, everything on my health tip, they take multivitamins daily because I do. Every morning when they wake up, is you make your bed, you go downstairs, you brush your teeth, you wash your face, you do 10 push-ups, then you get dressed. Like, I'm just planting a bunch of seeds.
Mm-hmm. I can't say how they are.
Yeah, and I can't say how they'll turn out what they'll be. But I just look at myself and I say, man, I pretty much raised myself. The truth of me, I had parents who were on crack and on alcoholics and in and out of homeless shelters, and I was just this kid observing the environment, you know? Like, the best part about growing up in a hostile home is you have to be emotionally intelligent. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking at daddy like, can I talk to him right now or is he pissed off? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, reading the room. I mean, that's valuable in life. That's so valuable in life, dealing with people everywhere.
Yeah, and so learning that as a kid, and then all of my jobs have been in sales, so I've always had to deal with so many different people. And then working at an all-white private school, I've got to be around so many people that I can't find the narratives of the world to be true anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go right now to Linwood and Prospect, and there's probably 50 homeless people outside. I can walk into Sunfresh, and I guarantee you, it's somebody like, hey, you want to buy some food stamps from me? I can go over to the plaza right now, and the white people are walking with their nice fur coats and their UGG boots. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've universally been all through Kansas City. I know people from the 5A's Deuce, 12th Street, Click Clack, TSG. I mean, you can name any gang, and I'm with all these people. And I'm like, none of the narratives from the world are true. All the guys that I know have been murdered, they didn't want to be tough guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, but if you don't have somebody to let you know who you are, then mm-hmm. it's easy to fall victim to what you see in front of you. That's why I credit my father. My father never made a lot of money. He isn't, you know, he was in and out of jail my whole life. He's an alcoholic by worldly standards. But I still saw a man get up and go to work every day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I probably call my daddy twice a month and I just tell him thank you. As a kid, you don't really understand what your parents go through. You take a lot of things for granted.
You sure do.
And because I became a father so young, I look at my daddy and it's like, dude, you was doing this? What? Like, that's the biggest, like, mind-blowing thing for me right now in the life I live. There's so many men in this world. We go from being little boys, playing kickball and running around at recess, to being in middle school and playing video games. So you are responsible for a woman and children. Mm-hmm. And ain't no manual. It's just, you better be a good man and you better be faithful and you better be loyal and you better not make mistakes. And it's like, God damn, how does every man just is expected to be great out of nowhere? And so it's just like, I'm grateful for having a father, because if I don't have a father, I'm not this good of a husband. I'm not this good of a dad myself. It's not possible, especially as young as I am.
Well, it looks to me you love being a father. I mean, that's what truly comes out in your posts and your pictures and everything. You just love being a father.
I just understand, man, the world is an illusion. Nothing is real. Like, no, like right now on this phone, if I had $1 in my bank, or if I had 7 bank accounts with $1 million in each one, I'm still just Johnny. I'm still just their father. Mm-hmm. And none of us have ever seen a hearse with a U-Haul behind it. Mm-hmm. So every material thing is really irrelevant when you think about it on the grand scheme. But I can remember conversations with my mom. I can remember talking with her and laughing with her and smiling with her. And she's been dead 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And with my two dead children, you know, one died at birth, the other died at 4.5 months. And I still can remember his little smile on his face when I was changing his diapers. So I know, man, no matter what shoes I buy my kids, no matter how many cars, no matter how big the house is, at the end of the day, it's the relationship that I have with them that matters most. And my dad never threw the ball, never threw the football with me outside once, never played basketball with me. The first time my father ever seen me play basketball, I was a junior in high school. I scored 33 points. And he was like, wow, you really can do this. It's like, yes. But I can say maturely now where I am, and I understand him. He went to work every day. He made $7 or $8 an hour. He got out of work. He drank his beer. He went to sleep. He was stressed. And now when I conversate with him, it's like, you don't understand how much of an impact you could have had on my life. Like, if my dad is the dad that I wanted him to be, mm-hmm. I don't have all these kids. I wasn't doing anything but sleeping with a bunch of women. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I won't allow my sons to fall into the mistakes that I made. And that's really why I say fatherhood is so important to me, because I know who I would be if I would have had someone like me. However, not having someone like me, it turned me into the person I am, if that makes sense. So it's like it's weird.
It does, man. And you make here's the thing, Johnny. You make so much sense. But just because of the experience that you lived through and talking like that. So do you think, did your father influence you to become the father that you are as well, good and bad?
Yes. One of the things I love to say is, man, I learned to eat the meat and spit out the bones, right? So, my dad.
You know that's going to be the name of this episode, right?
I'm with it, man.
Let me write that down. Eat the meat and spit out the bones. Hold on.
Yeah.
All right, you go on. I'm writing that down. Go ahead. Keep on talking.
He was a great dude in my eyes, but he got off work and got drunk every day. Him and my mom had really bad domestic violence. He was always in and out of jail. So everybody was like, well, your daddy crazy. Your daddy don't know what he's talking about. But from the perspective of his son, my dad never yelled at me. Mm-hmm. He never told me I wouldn't be anything. He never cussed me out. I can remember being in the seventh grade. We took a field trip to St. Louis and got back at like 2:30 in the morning. And I can remember him being at the school to walk home with me. And I had an attitude because we didn't have a car. So I was embarrassed that all my friends were getting picked up in the car and their parents was driving them home. And me and my father were walking. And it hit me maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, this dude woke up in the middle of the night at 1:45 a.m. to walk to a building to wait on me. Mm-hmm. If that ain't love, I don't know what it is. I just had to start looking at things different, but society to teach us to look at life from a monetary value, you know? Mm-hmm. What type of job do your father got? What type of car do y'all house? What type of neighborhood do y'all live in? So I judged my father when I was a kid because we were in poverty, you know? I put so much on his plate. Like, it's your fault we ain't doing good. It's your fault I can't go to school in the new Jordans. The kids who go to school with the new Jordans, they mama's prostituting so they can buy them. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of things you don't know when you a kid.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I ain't got a nice car, nice shoes, but we have a home. I got a mama and a daddy. And I've learned, man, when we was in a homeless shelter, you know, the homeless shelter wouldn't let my father live with us. So it was just me, my mom, and my little brother.
Mm-hmm.
And once a week, we would walk down the street to the McDonald's so we could see my dad. And he would buy us McDonald's and stuff. And just little things like that. It's like, man, this man didn't have to do anything. I'm a father and you're a father. You don't have to raise your kids. You can say deuces and just be gone.
Right.
And the fact that this man came home every day after work with knowing how bad him and my mama would fight and how often she would put him in jail, and just he always came back. And I asked him a few years ago, I was like, if you could have just left my mama and lived your life, would you have done it? And he said no, because seeing the man that I've grown into is like worth it for him. And that mm-hmm. just, it humbled me. Because, man, I used to fist fight my daddy. In the middle, like, when my mama and daddy had fights, my mama would wake me up and make me go fight my daddy. And then I would, you know, I'm 12, 13, 14 fighting this grown man. And after I fight him, I'm dropping to my knees praying and crying. You know, I was real conflicted with my childhood. Because I was in fellowship of Christian athletes, but I'm hanging out with all the drug dealers.
I was going to ask you, at the time, do you remember loving your father at that time, despite his flaws?
I did. man, I remember me and him were fist fighting, and then the next morning I'm sitting down watching the Lakers highlights with him. Like, cause I never wanted to fight him. My mm-hmm. mother would make me. But man, I remember him getting out of jail and me riding around downtown looking for him, being happy as hell. I can remember sitting in the courtroom, you know, seeing him come out the back with the orange jumpsuit on, the handcuffs on. Man, that just broke my heart. It made me cry.
And people don't understand that dichotomy a lot of times. Yeah, they don't understand how that can happen.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I pride myself on is I've never been in jail, never been in trouble with the law, because my daddy said, Johnny, I'm going to tell you, if you don't want to go to jail, don't do stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was that simple. Like, I didn't have roll with expired Tim Tags, fake Tim Tags, fake insurance cards. You name it, like real hood, no driver's license. But I always was respectful, so the cops never, you know, did anything to me. I've only been in the back of a paddy wagon one time in my life. I was 16, and our lights were off in our home. And my dad used to run the extension cord from our house to the house next door.
You told me that last time.
And somebody had saw and called the police, and the police pulled up. But my dad had warrants, so it was like, if my dad goes out there, they're going to take him to jail, and I don't know how long I'm going to see him, versus if I go outside, they just going to run my name and let me go back in. So it was three or four cops. I was young, so I was a little hot-headed. I talked back a little more than I should, and they put me in handcuffs and put me in the back of the paddy wagon. And after the cop walked around to the back of the house and he seen it, it was a lock on our light meter, and that's what was going on. He ended up letting me. I was just a kid, you know what mm-hmm, I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he let me out the paddy wagon, took the handcuffs off, and they just left. Yeah, but that's the only time I've, you know, been in a situation like that. And my daddy was like, if they would have tried to drive off with me, he would have came outside. I'm like, boy, you better stay your ass in the house. Chill out, dog. So, like, we got a real crazy relationship just because we've been through so much. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a dollar amount that can replace growing up in a home with both of your parents. Like, and even with me having my kids live with me and their moms aren't here, but I do whatever I can to like show them that I respect their mothers mm-hmm. and to show them that you can have a good relationship. Because most of the kids in this world, if they don't know their father, they've had to watch their parents go through a divorce and pick a side. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever want my children to feel like they have to pick a side, because I never picked a side to this day. Mm-hmm. I love my mom. I love my dad. And I think if you want to look at a way to manipulate a person, you remove one of their parents, and then you pour in the propaganda from the media, and you just let it slowly manifest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I, man, look, I could talk to you for hours, Johnny. Hours. But what I'm going to wrap it up in a couple minutes here, but what I want to, remember last time we talked, you said at this point you're like a rough draft. You remember saying that?
Yes, sir.
So are you still in rough draft state, or where are you at? And do we ever get out of rough draft? What do you think?
At this point I don't think we do, right? And I say that because when I talked to you the last time, I thought I was intelligent, and I could sit here on the phone and say, man, I didn't know anything. And the most unique part about life for me now is the more I learn, the more I learn to have a lot to learn. And it always hit me, like when I read a new book, it's like, man, this information is in the world and don't nobody know it. Like currently, I'm reading TNT It Rocks the World by Claude Bristol. And it's like, hold on, this information is just out here in the world for anybody to pick up and read. And we paying attention to Black Lives Matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're so distracted.
And that's what you said last time, too, because you're right. I mean, there is so much free information out there for us to take in.
Yeah. Like another book that I just stumbled upon the other day is On Liberty by John Stuart Mill. And man, when I say everybody in the world should read that book, it blows you away.
And how do you find these books, Johnny? What do you do? Are they recommended, or are you going searching for them, or how do you recommend people find this information to take in and consume?
So I think it's, first off, is finding out what's important to you and what you love to do. Because we all have a hobby. Whatever you enjoy doing in your free time, that's what you really need to pour into. And so, of course, your algorithms will start recommending books after you click on them. But all the books I listen to are on audio, on YouTube, free audio books. Like, that's why when I talk about knowledge and becoming a different person and growing your mind, mm-hmm. it's not that you got to spend money. Yes, you can go to courses, seminars, but we all get in our car every day. You can turn your car into a mobile library if you really want to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, man, YouTube is where I listen to all my books. Another one I just finished is You Are the Placebo by Dr. Joe Dispenza, The Path of Prosperity by James Allen. I'm just so blown away. But the other part of that is every book I read, they all say the same thing. Whether it's a Black history book or it's the Bible or it's James Allen or it's Wallace D. Wattles or it's Ralph Waldo Emerson or it's Ralph Waldo Trine or it's Florence Noble Squinn, they all are saying the same thing. Your consciousness creates your reality. Proverbs 23:7, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. So that's why the world throws so much negative imagery at us.
Mm-hmm.
And James Allen said, as a man thinking, if you would guard your body, guard your mind. And so it's hit me. I've become this person. I don't consume the media. But the other part is I'm still the same kid I've always been because I grew up in a home without lights. So I wasn't watching TV every day. I wasn't programmed. You know, I didn't watch CNN for the first time, no lie, until I probably 2014, 2015. You know, mm-hmm. So it was real short-lived on how much the media like manipulated me. Mm-hmm. In 2008, I was on Barack Obama's campaign. I was driving around taking people to go vote, and I had the powder blue Week in Chains t-shirt on and all that. And then he won. Man, I remember getting in my car, had a white 1998 Monte Carlo. I'm riding around in the hood. Everybody's shooting guns in the air. Fireworks going off. And then you give it like a week or two, and you realize nothing changed. Mm-hmm. Murder rate still going up. Homeless rate still going up. Prostitutes still walking around. And it's like, damn, we was all manipulated. And what really, so though, that was in 08 when I was working on the Obama's campaign. In 2016, when Trump won the presidency, I'm working at an all-white private school. I'm at home watching CNN when Van Jones is like, this is a white lash and blah, blah, blah. So my brain is like, I don't know what I'm going to face tomorrow when I go to work. I go to work, sir, and everyone is crying. There's grief counselors there, and I am confused. What the hell is going on? Y'all white. Y'all should be doing backflips and cartwheels and playing Montel Jordan. This is how we do it and all that. And that's when it hit me like, wait, if everything I know about these people is wrong, everything that they know about me is wrong. Because mm-hmm. I only know about white people what I'm told on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
They only know about Black people what they see in rap music and NBA games. Holy crap. And that's when it all just kind of fell apart for me. I mean, I was the head of the social awareness club at this high school. And you know what I'm saying? I'm walking around with Know Your Rights, Colin Kaepernick shirt on. Dude, looking like an idiot. And it just hit me like, hold on, I've been manipulated. So I just had to go back to the basics. And I've always said it's the first book that I ever read start to finish was Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And then I went to Booker T. Washington, Up from Slavery, and that book just humbled me completely on what that man went through. And then I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and he was talking about Malcolm X grew up pretty middle class before his father got murdered. You know, he wasn't a ghetto boy. He went to a pretty white school. He didn't learn about the inner city until his dad got killed, his mother got remarried and kind of fell off, and he went into the system, and so he had to go into an impoverished neighborhood. And so that's why Malcolm X has such a perspective on the upper class and the lower class mm-hmm. versus Martin Luther King grew up pretty middle class, so he really didn't know much about the hood, you know? That's mm-hmm. And that's probably, that's what they really do is they get a Black person who's middle class and don't really relate. But in Malcolm X's book, he said for somebody to really shock the world, it's going to be somebody from the hood. It's going to be somebody who grew up at the bottom of the bottom mm-hmm. and are able to see through it. They don't fall victim to it. And that's all it is I haven't felt victim to my environment. Yes, I was in a homeless shelter. Yes, I was on Section 8. Yes, I've been around murder. Yes, my parents was on crack when I was a baby. God was protecting me the whole time.
Look, Johnny, so, this is why.
Yeah, man.
This is why I like you so much, because you just say it straight. You just say it like it is. It's just, and you're very, very direct.
Yeah. And that's the threat. The threat is somebody who's
right.
articulated.
You are
they,
right.
They want you, like, think about anytime something happened in the inner city. Don't they put the most ignorant person on the news that can't put a full sentence together?
Right.
And then so, God damn, you couldn't get the person that can talk at least? You got to get the man with the one eye who can't stop stuttering or something.
Holy Johnny. But you're right. You're right. You're right. And it goes the other way, too. They go to the neighborhood. They get the most redneck looking white guy out there.
Get the trailer talking. Park guy to K-Talk.
And it's just they manipulate us. But that's why I'm so glad that there are people like you out here and are willing to speak and just speak the truth and just to say what you say. And
all these narratives are fake. All the narratives are fake, and they all got it. God wins in the end, so you can keep this falsehood going, but we know what happens at the end is that God is still going to be standing.
And that wraps it up perfectly. Man, Johnny, look, I don't want it to be another year and a half before you come back on and talk to me again.
We can do this as often as you want, man. Because it needs to be done to the world. And the problem is, it's going to sound crazy, I get more conversations like this with white people than black people, is because I expose the fraudulent in a lot of black people with platforms. If you got a platform with 2-3 million people, the last thing you need to be doing is criticize. You need to be uplifting and motivating.
Thank you. You're exactly right. That's what the world needs. They need people with large platforms to promote the positivity and just to peace, man. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. But the bigger the platform, the more negative they are, which is something I pay attention to.
Well,
or the bigger they get, the more negative they become.
I know, and that's, you're right. And like you said before, it's both sides. It's both sides, because I think that makes, for some reason, that makes more money and more power, and it should be just the opposite.
I've always said, if you put a man of every race in a room together and let us conversate, we would see how much we got in common.
100%.
And don't let us start talking about women. Holy moly.
on that note, we're gonna bring it to a close. But we'll pick it up again on another one, man. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Johnny. I really appreciate it.
No problem, sir. Thanks for the opportunity, man.
All right, man. You take care of yourself.
You as well, sir. God bless. Have a great evening.
Same to you. Bye-bye. That's it, guys. Did you enjoy Johnny as much as I did the second time around? Well, of course you did. There's just something about Johnny that's so darn likable. That is, as long as you're the type of person who likes honest, non-political, highly intelligent, open people who aren't afraid to speak their mind, despite outside forces trying their hardest to divide us. I want to thank Johnny for taking the time out of his crazily hectic schedule to come back on the show and spread some wisdom and positivity. I'm going to include his book list in the written description of this episode, so I encourage everyone to check them out. So until next time, take care of one another, and thanks for listening.